listener production.
Hey, Bension Siebert here with The Briefing. This spring, the US will see a natural phenomenon of spectacular proportions not seen in over 200 years. Cicadageddon is coming. Cicadas, small, noisy, flying insects, are about to erupt straight out of the ground right across 16 US states. From Alabama in the south to Illinois in the north, from Maryland in the east to Oklahoma in the west. And I'm not talking about a few cicadas here. Not millions. Not even billions. Trillions of cicadas, a truly unimaginable number, are due to all burst out of the ground very soon. Why? Well, there are over 1,500 different species of cicada, but there are seven species that live for years underground before emerging in a massive brood every 7 years, 13 years, and 17 years. Because these year cycles of 7, 13, and 17 are all prime numbers, it's incredibly rare that they overlap. But now, for the first time since 1803, we're talking about when Thomas Jefferson was the president of the US, they're overlapping. So that means a lot of cicadas. But what will all of these bugs mean for the people who have to go about their daily lives across the US while this happens? How long will this outburst last, and when does it start? The Briefing's Simon Beaton sat down with Australia's leading expert on cicadas, Lindsay Popple, to get us the answers.
Lindsay, thank you for joining me on The Briefing. So what will a trillion cicadas look like? How will that sound?
Well, it's going to be quite noisy for those who are, you know, with their lifestyles, interact with the cicadas. So you're going to have not only large numbers of cicadas, but you're going to have multiple species singing at once, and those species each have their own specific type of song. So you're going to get this kind of cacophony of these pure tone screams going on out there in the environment, and it's going to be pretty intense for those states in the US that are going to experience the big emergence.
And are those different species because the different cicadas belong to different broods, which are the 13 or the 17 year cycles?
Yeah, so there are four species that have a 13 year life cycle, and there are three that have a 17 year life cycle. And there are 20 official different broods. A couple have gone extinct. So 14 of the broods have 17 years, and six of the broods are 13-year life cycles. So there's a lot more different broods that have 17-year life cycles than 13.
So why do these cicada species stay underground for 17 years or 13 years in their little broods? And I think more importantly, how do they do this?
Well, it's been the subject of a lot of discussion as to why they have these prime-numbered life cycles, and the periodicity, they call them periodical cicadas. So they live underground for so long before they emerge. It's a really rare trait in cicadas as far as we know. Other cicada species seem to have, you know, life cycles of a year or a few years, but nothing quite as mathematically complicated as having a prime numbered life cycle. And well, there's been a couple of reasons put forward as to why they do it. One is that it's difficult for predators to match their life cycles to prime numbers. It's just not easy to evolve. So that's one theory. And then they come out in mass numbers and overwhelm parasites, predators, that sort of thing. The other theory is that it could be linked to the glaciations, because the species with 17-year life cycles have a more northern distribution, whereas those with 13-year life cycles are more southern. So it could be climate-related in terms of climate oscillations. Wow. And things, yeah.
So will these two broods be in the same place at the same time? Or when we're talking about trillions of cicadas, is it just because across all of the states they'll all be emerging in different places?
Well, the places that are most interesting from the point of view of the two different life cycles coming out together include the states of Illinois and Indiana, where you're going to get 13-year and 17-year cicadas coming out at the same time, and they're probably going to interbreed, is what we expect.
How about risks? Will this be like a plague of locusts that decimate fields of grain and ruin agricultural harvests? Is this going to be a really bad thing?
No, it's not that big of a deal. So these cicadas prefer to feed on oak trees, but they will land and overposit it on a variety of trees. When I say overposit, that means laying their eggs. And that's where the cicadas usually do their damage. And yeah, sure, large numbers will be sucking the sap of trees and things like that, but that's not such a big deal. But the females have this scythe-like ovipositor that they carve into the twigs and bark of the tree to lay their eggs in. And that can cause some problems when there's a spillover into orchards. But in terms of mass devastation to crops and things, that's not going to happen.
Wow, so it's really just masses and masses of noise.
Yeah, because they're attracted to aggregate around calling males, they can get attracted to loud, noisy equipment like lawnmowers and brush cutters and that sort of thing. So people might find an unwelcome visitation from cicadas if they're out doing stuff in the outdoors while this is happening.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Okay, so there still could be some good TikToks.
Yes.
What does their lifestyle look like underground? Are they mainly hibernating, or are they active during those for up to 13 years before emerging?
Oh, yeah, underground, they're quite mobile. So under the ground, you get different conditions as well. Like when it rains above the ground, you get water percolating and going through. So they've got all these tunnels that they can move in, and they're quite mobile. Once you get a cicada nymph, it's a juvenile form. If you have it taken out of the ground and in your hand, it's quite an awkward, it looks like a little crustacean, and they sort of just move around and you think they can't do anything. But if you observe what they do in a terrarium, which I've done, when they build these tunnels, they can sort of do backflips and move around and do various things, and they're actually quite strong little insects under the ground. And that's the domain for most of their life. So they need to be able to, you know, get oxygen, tap into plant roots and get nutrients.
Do we know when they'll emerge? What determines exactly when they do come out of the ground?
Yeah, so it'll be a confluence of temperature conditions and humidity and things that stimulate them to emerge. And I think the peak emergence time should happen in about a month or so, yeah, into going May into June. They'll hang around for a few weeks in places where they get subject to harsh weather and things, they'll start to die off after sort of two to six weeks. In temperate locations, cicadas don't tend to live as long as adults as in more sheltered environments, because they tend to like to operate ideally in that sort of range of between 20 and in the 20s anyway of degrees Celsius. Yeah.
So it will just be for a small amount of time, 2 to 6 weeks, and throughout spring, whenever the right temperatures or conditions hit different areas of the US.
Yes,
that's correct?
That's right, yeah.
And we do have cicadas here in Australia. How different are our species? Do we have any that are cyclical like those in the States?
Well, we don't really know. There's a bit of conjecture around the life cycle durations of our cicadas in Australia. The greengrocer's thought to have a 6 or 7 year life cycle underground before emerging, but that's only based on very limited observations. And there seems to be a bit of inconsistency about, we start to think we get a handle on the timing of certain species here, and then they thwart us by not matching the pattern. So there is another theory that perhaps cicadas in Australia, like a lot of other organisms, can respond to the kind of boom and bust changing climate conditions, that mean that they may be able to stay underground for another year until they get the right conditions to emerge, or maybe more than 1 year. We're not sure.
Wow.
And in terms of how different are our cicadas? Well, we've got a lot of cicadas in Australia, close to 400 described species now, which is probably close to half of the total diversity. Once there's still quite a few undescribed species out there, that would mean that this is the cicada capital, Australia, and we'd have more species here than anywhere else. And amazingly, we do have some species that are very closely related to the American periodical cicadas, but we see them, the flowery baker, coming out every year in the eastern cities between Sydney, Brisbane, all the way up to to North Queensland, and they look kind of similar, and they're kind of strange. They sit upside down on trees and things, but it's quite enigmatic that we'd have such a close relative of a species that's so far away.
Do you think that we'll ever work out why these few species do this prime number emergence?
I think there'll always be theories, but we've been looking at it for quite a long time and mapping these broods out in intricate detail. You know, researchers in the US have been doing that. So I think part of the intrigue with them is the speculation around the prime numbers and having those theories put forward, but I don't think it'll ever be put to bed.
Wow. They're amazing animals. Are you going to get over to the States to see the swarms?
I wanted to get to the States. Unfortunately, I'm committed to activities here this year, so I'm going to have to wait for another opportunity to go and see them. So I might catch up with one of the other broods in between.
All right, Lindsay, well, maybe I'll see you there. Thank you for joining me on The Briefing.
Been a pleasure. Thanks, Simon.
Cicada expert Lindsay Popple there, speaking with The Briefing's Simon Beaton. That's all we have time for today, but if you enjoyed this chat, please share it with a friend or two and click follow so you never miss an episode. The Weekend Briefing is back tomorrow. Ant, what have you got on?
Hey guys, we're looking at history in this episode of The Weekend Briefing, but not just any part of history, a very specific, very sexual, very kinky part of history. My guest is Esme Louise James. She's a sex historian and has this hugely successful franchise called Kinky History. It's a book, it's TikTok videos, it's podcasts, and she shares some of the wildest, kinkiest, freakiest kinks throughout history, including the very first dildo.
Excellent. And Tom Tilley will be here on Sunday with Andreas Lunden, one of the contenders who braved New Zealand's wilderness in the new season of Alone. Make sure you catch it. Till next time, I'm Ben Sion Siebert. Thanks for joining us.